Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. Looking forward to a new week ahead and some great conversation. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, it was a weekend of quaking, wasn't it?
Boy, yeah. Headlines from around the world. Japan, I think, was first that I saw recently.
Yeah, and just then, the Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, late in the week there. Yeah. Southern Japan in particular hit hard, and people maybe still trapped even now, so our prayers with them.
And then Ecuador, 275 dead?
Yeah, about that, I think, and more than 2,500 injured.
Yeah.
Boy.
It made me think about, Reach Beyond, formerly HCJB. They had a medical mission, I think, still do. They've actually, I think, sold it with two local ministry teams there. But in Quito, so I'm thinking about there are many believers that have been involved in medical missions in Ecuador. And so no doubt they're probably rushing to the scene. And so just remember to pray for the needs of those families, those that have been injured and lost loved ones, and the opportunity for God's people in the medical facilities there that can really make a difference.
That's a great reminder. A lot of times we go, what can we do? Well, we can pray, certainly for folks like that and rushing in to help.
Yeah. So just something to keep in mind today as we think about our lives and hopefully no major earthquakes of economic or relational proportions. But, if you've ever experienced incarceration or have family member that has, you know how challenging that is, and we're going to talk about that today and the help and the hope that's available through a wonderful ministry called Justice Fellowship. Now, of course, we know about Prison Fellowship, and Justice Fellowship is an arm of Prison Fellowship that works specifically for criminal justice reform. Prison Fellowship was started with Chuck Colson some 30-plus years ago. This is longer than that now, I think, isn't it? And Chuck just the anniversary of his passing here this month, and we're honored to bring back a friend that we've talked with on several occasions, and I always enjoy the opportunity to discuss prison reform and justice. Those are important key issues, and the Bible has a lot to say about justice, and so we're looking forward to bringing in Craig DeRoche today. Coming back on Connecting Faith, Craig is president of Justice Fellowship. Again, the Criminal Justice and Public Policy Reform Arm of Prison Fellowship. And before that, Craig served as a Speaker of the House of Representatives in Michigan, serving seven growing suburban Detroit communities in the Michigan legislature. He was actually one of the youngest legislators, and he's told his story was in the past about getting finally caught in his addictions, alcohol addictions, and how that changed his life, and I encourage you to read his story when you have some time. But Craig, I want to welcome you back to Connecting Faith. Good to talk with you.
Neil, it's always a privilege to be on your show and talking with your great listeners out there. And I do want to thank you for reminding us to keep the people in Ecuador and Japan and the entire region in our prayers, because that is just a reminder of how small we are.
Yeah, we have challenges, but they're facing some major ones. So, Craig, just maybe by way of kind of introduction, again, just paint the picture of Justice Fellowship. How it developed. I know on Family Life Today, I think it was just last week, they were doing some reflection on Chuck Colson's life, and of course his passing was in April a couple of years ago, but. How did you get connected with the Prison Fellowship and then leading Justice Fellowship?
I got connected. I told my story, which is in the book that you mentioned called Highly Functional, is what I titled it. I'm making fun of the name Highly Functional. I lived in addiction for 29 years while I tried to pursue my life through my own self-will and grit and determination and the talent that, of course, God gave me. and I tried to solve addiction my own way, and ended up losing everything, and surrendered in Christ, and God had lifted me up and removed from me my compulsion to return to drinking. And it had been about a year, and my part of the deal was I had prayed. My first real honest prayer was, take away these difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help demonstrate your power, your grace, your love, your way of life. So it wasn't about me. It was about others seeing God's immense power. And so I felt that, you know, this miracle that occurred to me. And when I got invited and people would say, would you tell us what happened? I'd say, yeah, that's my end of the deal. I've got to go talk about how great God is. So I was invited to speak in DC and, you know, on this to an audience to explain why this was actually what, yeah, I guess I'd call it social conservatives or Christian conservatives, why justice reform and the way that we looked at addiction traditionally was probably not the way that our faith actually is, as somebody who's in recovery for addiction. And I gave that speech and people said, you should really be introduced to Chuck. And I was about a month later, and he convinced me to drop my net, leave behind my business, and told me God had a bigger plan for me. And I know what God did for me. I'm alive and sober today because of him. And so I followed Chuck, and he was a great mentor with me for 7 months before he passed in 2012. And after he passed, the board asked me what they thought that I would do, you know, as the next chapter in Prison Fellowship's legacy of serving those that you know, need to be restored, that have been involved in the, you know, crime and the justice system. And I said, I think we start with changing the entire national narrative, and that begins with our own people, that this is our values that are on the line and what we actually believe. And let's start there, and then we'll demonstrate it through, you know, changing public policy too. But this is not introducing people, telling them to change their heart or change their values. It's an invitation for us to live out what we already believe. And that really has made a radical difference in the national debate. And I do want to update you, though, real quick, Neil. I don't want to go too long on your first question, but starting this year, we changed to just calling ourselves Prison Fellowship because so many people do support our mission. It's connected hand in glove. Chuck always believed it was the ministry to people in the system, but also our ministry to those that run the system. You know, that it's about our values. It's about the word, the truth, and seeking better outcomes together. And so we went ahead and we've always been one organization, but we use two names. But this year we're just using one name. So it's Prison Fellowship that we do our advocacy in, the same as we do our Angel Tree and other programs in as well.
Well, we're honored to know about the work and be a part of it. I'm just grateful for the good work that's done day in and day out through Prison Fellowship. And, of course, we're so pleased to be a part of the Angel Tree program, too, and we're looking forward to that already, you know, coming up next year. But, Craig, let's talk about, you know, big picture a little bit about, before we take our first break, just about what's going on in our nation. I mean, we incarcerate the more people per capita, I think, than anybody else, right? I mean, how did we get to this position?
Yeah, we've got, you know, on a big level, we've got over 2 million people. What that means to us, incarcerated just in the prisons, we arrest 12 million people a year, which means 36,000 people today will be arrested in America. What that means when you get down to the family level, 1 in 9 African-American kids, you know, that are still in school as you're listening right now, has a parent incarcerated in America today. 1 in 9 of all races of our K-12 school system, that's 1 in 28. Roughly 1 kid in every class is a parent incarcerated. That doesn't count probation or parole. And you know, so this is a huge part of our culture. And as Christians, there's 36,000 opportunities a day of people that have been arrested, likely living away from God, making choices that are criminal instead of seeking God's help to solve the problems in their heart of fear or anger or whatever it is they're going through. And we have a chance to minister to them and also to those that are charged with keeping our community safe and administering justice and our connection to the victims, that those are the people that are should be in our hearts and in our work as Christians as well.
Craig DeRoche serves with Prison Fellowship and working in the areas of public policy and criminal justice reform. And we're going to continue our conversation with him. Maybe that you have a story to share or a question that's come up. There's been lots of conversation, and we're going to find out more from Craig about, you know, how do we deal with a prison population that has, 60% more people of color than anything else. And I think I saw a statistic, 1 in 3 black men will go to prison at some point in their lifetime. Obviously, there's some real concerns about what's going on in the racial divide in terms of prisons. We also want to talk about maybe if there's justice in the justice system, what's happening there, prison overcrowding, we'll get to that, victims' rights, all those things a part of our conversation in the moments ahead. I encourage you to stay tuned. If you'd like to join us with a call, here's the number. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or you can drop us a note. It's myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. There's an email link there, and you can send your question to my guest today, Craig DeRoche from Prison Fellowship. More in just a moment. Today about transformation and reintegration, all those things that happen that theoretically that we believe should happen when we're talking about criminal justice. Talking today with Craig DeRoche. Craig serves in the area of criminal justice and public policy reform for Prison Fellowship. He was a legislator in the state of Michigan. He's written about his life 20-plus years of addiction to alcohol and a powerful book called Highly Functional. And he's joining us today as we talk about what's going on in terms of our criminal justice system. And Craig, I guess maybe let's talk about, you know, living out what we believe, and maybe we can just get into that as we go along. But just say a bit about, you know, there's been a great deal of unrest over the last months, really, I guess, and maybe a couple of years now. But you know, if 60% the prison population are people of color, and 1 in 3 black men will go to prison at some point in their lifetime. Those are pretty startling statistics. And is there a reason why that is, other than just the system working against them?
Well, there's some big reasons and some smaller reasons, but there hasn't been enough study in this area. We're starting to see more. From the federal government down to the local level, looking into it. But when I first got involved in the advocacy at Prison Fellowship, and we were trying to change the national debate, a lot of people assumed when they saw the statistics that it was, there's nothing simple about racism, but that it was merely, is the word I would use, racism, that it was a targeting of certain ethnicities. But as we jumped into the numbers, and just from my own personal experience being from the Detroit area, as I was born in 1970, right after the riots in Detroit in the late 60s, where Detroit was, you know, since that time, largely run by an African-American mayor, prosecutor, police chief, et cetera, that they had roughly similar numbers than a city that had a higher population of a Caucasian mayor, prosecutor, et cetera, like a Chicago or other large cities. And so looking at the numbers, what really some of the structural things that we've gotten wrong in America is we've incentivized arrest and incarceration and conviction of people. So what we've really done is we've told the folks that work the job, whether they're white or black, racist or not racist, that how they get paid, how they protect their income, how they protect their pension is by arresting and locking up more people. That's the metric that we care about, not justice as a metric. And so what we saw was, a lot of policies that were passed that and a lot of behaviors where people would target the folks that couldn't defend themselves. Because if you're getting paid in the federal and state drawdowns are based on how many people you're arresting and convicting, it wouldn't make sense to go arrest and try to get convictions from people that could afford lawyers. It would be more expedient to arrest people that can't defend themselves. And so just at a human nature level, what I've seen in the numbers and I speak quite frequently to is human beings, and their performance out there. They're being told I need to arrest and convict as many people as possible to justify my existence. So that's what I'm going to do. And you get, far more reckless policies that we're seeing the tide turn against, like in New York City, where they're literally stopping and frisking people based on how they looked at, more than 500,000 people a year on the sidewalk with no warrant, no other reason. So, again, you're incentivizing the police to target people based on how they looked. And naturally, the police were gravitating toward people that looked like they couldn't put up a fight or defend themselves if they chose to bring charges against them. And in America, with over 97% of all of the arrests never going to trial, we've created a system where once you're arrested, you're essentially pushed into a situation where it's a negotiated situation and not necessarily, justice meted out by your peers through a jury system and sentencing by a judge. And so the system's moved incredibly distant away from what we might think it is or what we see on the, primetime television shows as far as what the activity on a daily basis is. And that has led to a number that if you look at it from a socioeconomic standpoint, you see that whether it's a Caucasian, Hispanic, or African-American person in the criminal justice system, those that are there are by and large on the lower end of the American socioeconomic scale, and that's who's been targeted. And because of the population of minorities in America that are on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, they are disproportionately represented in the ranks, which speaks poorly of America on so many ways, including, of course, the race issues. It's kind of a horrifying thing that we're doing, is kind of preying on and targeting the least of us.
Hmm. Fascinating insight. I hadn't really, considered that. I think we assume that we're putting the emphasis on crime prevention, but that's not really necessarily prevention. I guess the bottom line is, where should we be incentivizing, and what would that look like in terms of changing the way things are currently done?
Well, violent crime, particularly disruptive violent crimes like rape and murder, in home invasion in communities, if you talk to any person who's not involved in this debate, you said, what do you want me to get right? I'm creating a city today. They'd say, I want you to get those three things right. That's where I get my sense of safety from. And if you look at the arrest and conviction rates in those areas, they're abysmal. Detroit averages about a 50% arrest rate in murders. Chicago was at 30% in 2012 of cases that cleared for murders. Rape, it can be even worse than that. And so what we're doing, again, is we're seeing the communities, losing track of their values, the reason why we created a justice system in the first place, and saying, but the money is in getting people for possession of drugs or doing the smaller things because I can get a conviction and fines and fees paid to fund the system. And that's where, the volume of policing and prosecutorial activity is, rather than the resources going to the harder to solve cases that actually bring what the Bible describes and everything from the Proverbs to the Psalms as peaceful, tranquil homes and communities and where I think God would have us live.
Craig, if we're defining biblical justice or justice as you advocate for it here at Prison Fellowship, what maybe language or elements would that include?
There's three, and I want your listeners, this is important, because Chuck Colson was very prolific. He wrote 30 books, and he was one of the smartest guys of the century on theology and history and everything else. But I can describe things simpler. It's at the sentencing phase. The sentence that you give somebody when they do something wrong should be restorative. So we call that restorative punishment. Are you trying to restore the damage? Because if you're just punishing somebody for no reason, you're shooting your ammunition up into the air. So is it going to undo the damage? The second area is a constructive culture. The people that are in the criminal justice system, are they being exposed to a moral, lifestyle that's consistent with our values? Whether or not they're Christian, or in prisons, that's not the point, but is there stealing, lying, violence, or are we introducing them to a culture that you want people to live in, that's in sync with our values? And then the third is when somebody repays their debt, are you saying that you're square with them and you're allowing them to live to their God-given potential? So there's really three, without, going into the complexities of the law in Scripture, to say, is it restorative and proportionate up front? I think that's where God would want us to be. Is there a point to what you're doing? Everything from an eye for an eye to the other justice lesson, say it should be proportionate, it should be directed to what the person did wrong. Second, when you're in there, are you moving somebody toward a life that will move them away from crime? Right now I'd argue we're moving people toward crime and away from God largely. And then third, is there redemption? I think that certainly is a Christian value. It's the center of Christ and his sacrifice for us all on the cross. But I also think in a secular America, they would say that's what you're supposed to do. Someone pays their debt and they're welcome to move forward. But we don't have any of that in America. The smallest conviction is a life sentence in America. And so Prison Fellowship and so many others, our church networks are coming together to rise up to say, those are the three things we want back in America.
If I hope you are stirred by our conversation today, I want to do something to advocate for justice. What does that really look like? We'll jump in more detail coming up here in the second half of the program here with Craig DeRoche. Craig is the Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Public Policy at Prison Fellowship, the nation's largest outreach to prisoners, former prisoners, and their families. And he leads the organization's efforts to advance restorative criminal justice reform at the state and federal levels. Love to have you join the conversation as well and be part of what God can do through us if we actually get involved as Jesus has commanded us to do. Talking Craig DeRoche today, he's also told his story about his alcohol addiction in the book Highly Functional. You can join the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. More with Craig DeRoche coming up. Strand on Family Life today, last week, talking just the legacy of Chuck Colson, I think it was last week, mentioning that Amazing Grace, it's the favorite song of those that are incarcerated, because there's freedom found in God's grace no matter what your circumstances. But the reality is that many are incarcerated, 2 million in prison in our nation, 12 million arrested, 36,000 a day, and talking about what's going on in terms of prison reform and advocating for justice. Craig DeRoche is a Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Public Policy at Prison Fellowship, He's a recognized expert on this area. He's testified before Congress and confers with lawmakers to help them design legislation that prioritizes accountability, community participation, and second chances. And he's experienced second chances. He was a speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives at the young age of 34 and served in that body for a number of years, finally caught up with him. He's told his story in the book Highly Functional about his many years of alcohol addiction. We're honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. We do have, an overcrowding issue, don't we, Craig, though, in our prisons. And I'm wondering if the fact that prison overcrowding, has that been sort of pushing some of the reforms, or is it just pushing people back out without having, restored anything?
Yeah, it's overcrowding is the core of a lot of things that we get wrong, but clearly it's the most dangerous thing that we can do as citizens to allow our prisons to operate in that way. If you think of the prison as a service organization to you as a taxpayer, I think that we would all say what it's there for is to make me safer, and the people that stay there, 95% of them are going to come back into the neighborhood. They should come back in better shape. You know, if somebody goes to addiction rehab, they should come back more likely to stay sober. You know, if you go into the hospital for a heart treatment, your heart, should have a chance of getting better. If your kid goes to a school, they should get smarter. You know, it's just simple. But in America, for whatever reason, we thought it's acceptable to put people in prisons in a culture there that allows for violence, drugs, gangs, sex, for crying out loud, all sorts of things that move people away, from moral living and actually does damage. So we're investing in making ourselves less safe. And when you're overcrowding them, just like you'd say, well, we'll just dump another 30 kids in the classroom. We won't be able to educate them, but we'll just fill it up. We'd be outraged as parents, and the same at a hospital or any other institution. But with prisons, we've thought that that's okay for some reason, and it's at our expense. But more importantly, as Christians, it's at the expense of a life created in the image of God that has the potential to help so many others, as we've seen from whether it's Chuck Colson or the thousands and thousands of other examples of people that took their debt, the things that they did wrong, repaid it, and then used that experience for the benefit of other people. And what we're doing is we're seemingly discounting that is available, that promise that God made us, that he knows every hair on our head, that he created us in his image, and all of the stories in scripture, whether it be Moses or David or others, that murder and adultery and all sorts of other crimes, Paul, Saul of Tarsus, that we don't see that in the people that are in prison today, that they could be the Chuck Colsons and the folks that could actually transform our communities. But we see that at Prison Fellowship, and so many of your listeners already see it. And that's really the fuel that runs the engine, that is Prison Fellowship and that transformation. And where it works well, we do a lot of stuff in Minnesota, and we've seen that work well. And we're embraced by the state leaders and secular government. And we have events coming up that try to grow that so the communities can transform.
Mm-hmm. Craig, I want to take a call from Catherine. She's listening in Minneapolis and asked the question I think many of us probably feel about, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of power for the average person. Catherine, you're on with Craig DeRoche. Go ahead with your question.
Oh, thank you. I was just on my way up to jail to visit a friend and trying to be an advocate and support her on a first-degree drug charge. And I get so frustrated because as trying to be an advocate, I have no power. I can't talk to anybody. If I were to stand up in a courtroom and say something, you can't do that. It's really difficult. And I don't look in her head. I look in her heart. And I know that she wants to do right. And I have another experience. I have a really big experience going on right now. And with my son who spent time out in California in prison, you know, because he was a drug addict and he went and, you know, committed a burglary. He did his time and he got out, and it's been nothing but just, I don't even know how to explain it, like a nightmare since he's been out of there.
Well, it's, Catherine, it sounds like even as Craig has said that this is really the way it is a nightmare, right? I mean, Craig, you said that you know it doesn't really matter what it is, but it's a life sentence, right? And so, how can Catherine come alongside not only her son but this friend that she's actually on the way to visit today?
Absolutely. And the first thing I want to say, and Catherine, thank you. God bless you and the work that you're going to do today, and God bless your son. He's just like me. I broke a whole bunch of laws. I got arrested for a couple. But addiction will drive us to fall short in any number of ways. But to where your heart is and where your frustration is, that's what we're trying to do at Prison Fellowship. We do realize that it's hard for leaders to hear the voice of one person. And we know that the leaders, as I said, already have these values in their heart. So how we help them live them out is by rising up and bringing our voices together. And so, for example, because you said you live in Minneapolis, we're having an event on May 1st, on Sunday, where we're doing a 5K race at the Seafoam Stadium at Concordia, where we're going to try to rally people to come together to be a unified voice and to bring that to the media and elected officials. We have some law enforcement, I believe some elected leaders that are going to be there to talk about what we call the second prison, that people don't even know exists in America, that your son is in right now, that I paid my debt to the first prison, but you've created the second prison and I can't get out of it. So we're calling this an Unlock the Second Prison event. And we hope that you can come out to it. People that, it, you know, for Catherine and your listeners that want to come out, there is a registration fee. But if you can't pay that, we're giving scholarships now, so everybody can attend that wants to come out and support Second Chances. And we're going to be growing those around the country. And this is the best part about this, Catherine and Neil, that while we're doing it at Concordia, guess what's happening inside the walls? The prisoners, the people that are currently incarcerated, are doing 5K races of their own to show a solidarity that they're going to get started now because they want their voices to be heard when they've repaid their debts. And we're going to do that together. I just think it's an amazing time for America where we can rise up and, again, change this entire country's view of the value of human life in each of us. And bring that in line with where Christ would have us be, and I think that God will bless that, and I think that together we can overcome these frustrations and we can make a difference.
Are you seeing any movement on that track? I guess because I think mentioned the voting rights for 5.9 million felons that have no right to vote. I mean, is there any inclination to say, you know, maybe we need to allow some second chances? If someone's paid their debt, what is the point of sort of continuing to carry on this sentence?
Yeah, the president started the year with his State of the Union address saying that we're a nation of second chances. Speaker Paul Ryan said recently the same thing, this country is not living up to its charge. Where we hold people back that have repaid their debts and that people should have second chances. And that's what we call closure. And that, as I say, is the core of, what the Bible tells us we're going to fall short from when we get past Genesis 1-3, that we know the score, that even for those of us that have been saved in Christ already, I fall short when I get on my knees at night and I do my inventory of what I did right and wrong and what I'm grateful for that day. I still fall short. I'll be perfected, by Christ when in glory, but not on this earth. And so what better way for us to demonstrate, Matthew 25 and that we get the picture on that than to come together as Christians in America and solve this great injustice of how we treat people that have paid back their debt that could be of the highest use to us rather than being considered outcasts.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more with Craig DeRoche, who serves as Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Public Policy at Prison Fellowship. They're the nation's largest outreach to prisoners, former prisoners, and their families. You can find out more at prisonfellowship.org, pfm.org will get you there as well. And, you know, for those that are in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and want to be a part of this event May 1st, I assume you can, Craig, you can find out more at Prison Fellowship, I assume, on that as well, right?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Second Prison, right. Yep.
All right. Prisonfellowship.org, pfm.org. Check it out. We'll continue in a moment. Got a listener email question to get to. And we'll do that and take your questions as well. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. Craig DeRoche with Prison Fellowship joining us today. We're talking prison reform. You're listening to Connecting Faith. My guest today is Craig DeRoche. Craig serves as Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Public Policy at Prison Fellowship. And he has told his story with us in the past. He's also been on Real Recovery. He had a long concealed addiction to alcohol. He was a Speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives, served in that body for a number of years, but had a couple of arrests and finally rehab and a renewed focus on his Christian faith that he experienced lasting recovery. He's told about in his book, Highly Functional. I recommend you go online to find the podcast to those interviews and be challenged. It's at myfaithradio.com. When you go to myfaithradio.com, you can also click on the Connecting Faith show page and use the email link to send us a question. That's what this anonymous listener did. And they say, I've had a run-in with the criminal justice system when I was younger, but my family had money for an attorney, so I received a much lighter treatment than others there who had committed equal or even a lesser crime than me. So speak to how poverty plays into that issue, Craig.
Well, that's really it. And, you know, the founding fathers of our country recognized that, and this may sound a little, you know, different, I guess, view of the Constitution, but the way I look at so many of the checks and balances they created was out of a concern that they had seen in human history, whenever a government had unchecked power, that it led to, abuse and the decline of liberty and justice. And so they were very cognizant of justice. That's why in our Bill of Rights, you know, the Fourth Amendment, you know, for warrantless searches, the Fifth Amendment against incriminating, against yourself, the Sixth Amendment that you get a lawyer. There's far more work done about justice in our Constitution than there is about, religion or freedom of speech, which seem to get more attention. And the idea was, if the government could come in and prosecute you and you could not defend yourself, the kind of the same philosophy that they apply to the Second Amendment, the government has guns and a militia, then the citizenry should have one so the government can't overtake them. But what we've done in America in modern times is the government has all of the policing, prosecution, force available to them, where they can ramp up and bring in federal and state resources seemingly in an unlimited capacity. But to an average citizen, they can't defend themselves even for a small claim, whether it's possession of marijuana or a low-level shoplifting. There's no lawyer available. Even a public defender would only give them minutes, not hours of time. And that hurts justice. And what it does is it devalues the life of that person. What we're saying is that some lives are more valuable than other lives based on their ability to get our attention and defend themselves. And I don't think that's what I know that's not what I believe as a Christian. I don't believe that's what most people believe as Americans. And I certainly don't believe that's how our government was constructed with our constitution and framing documents. was that we should be valuing the life of each of these people and dignifying it with, if even if, you know, again, let's, you did something, your anonymous emailer said, I did, you know, they did something wrong. That's okay. You still should get a restorative proportionate punishment and be allowed to live to your God-given potential once you repay the damage that you did. And but we take that off to the table if somebody can't afford to participate in the justice system. And for those of us as a Christian that, you know, I'm pro-life as I am, that's an attack on the value of another human being's life. And that incenses me. That compels me to act. And I think that should be one of the main reasons why we rise up together as a community, as Christians today.
Well, speaking of rising up, where can we be most effective at, maybe in terms of this point of the spear? I mean, is it just talking to our local representatives? Is it actually trying to plug into a prison ministry already established? What's best?
Well, to me, there's never any higher or better use on any given day than when you have the opportunity to minister to somebody one-on-one. Share your experience, strength, and hope of your walk with Christ, that they would be attracted to it. But as we go together in community, I believe that, you know, it's not just prison fellowship, but while we're on the phone and your listeners are there, our mission and what Chuck Colson created us to be was a convener. And it's not just prison fellowship. We work with the National Association of Evangelicals and the Catholic Church and the Southern Baptist and so many others where we convene people together so we can have a unified voice. So I would encourage your listeners, come and join us in our advocacy. Give us your email address, your contact information, so we can let you know when there's something going on in your state or at the federal government. We can give you the white papers and the background documentation of what these complicated things mean. We can also direct you to participate in not only our events, but in other events where we can raise our voices, like the community event in St. Paul coming up, and you know, Colorado Springs after that, and so many. And absolutely, for those that have the heart and the time and the willingness, you know, join with your local prison ministry at your church. And other organizations, Prison Fellowship and others, that give you an opportunity to minister to people directly. It's a life, I promise you, it's a life-changing experience.
Craig, you had a couple of alcohol-related arrests, and I know that, you know, from our past conversations that our prisons, our jails are full of issues of addiction and, you know, drugs and chemical use. What can we do to change maybe sentencing and that whole aspect of, you know, how we're putting people away for, you know, we're not making our communities any safer?
Yeah, you know, the just as your emailer said, or actually it was the caller, Catherine, who said, you know, it was a robbery to fuel, you know, because, you know, something was needed for the addiction. So it's not just, you know, drug possession that is filling up our prisons. It's violent crime, robberies, you know, violent shootings, you know, things that the person wouldn't do if they weren't compelled in their heads at that day to feel that that was their solution to fuel their addiction. And we as Christians, just to give this simple mechanical solution for me, was to learn that alcohol and drugs weren't my problem. They were my solution to my problem. That I had things wrong inside of me, fear, anger, resentment, shame, guilt, and that my solution was to drink or drug them away. And while I'm in my addiction, it might make sense to hurt somebody or steal from someone. And so if my solution is Christ instead of the drugs and alcohol in the first place, then I can overcome my fear and my shame and my guilt, just like Scripture says. And the person that you're ministering to and you're helping, that's available to them today. And that's where God, I think, would have a service, is by demonstrating this solution so others can be attracted to it and leave behind these solutions of violence or drugging or theft or the other things that we want out of our communities once and for all. And you know, that's really you know, to me, the mechanics of this. So how we do it is when you sentence somebody, you take into account that the sentence should be pushing somebody toward a solution that works, a durable solution away from the life that they were in. While they're in the system, the culture should be a moral culture that introduces them to a life that maybe they've never known based on how they grew up. I certainly know I never got to live sober after the age of 10. So it was a new life for me. And then once they've repaid their debt, they get a chance to live that way and attract others toward it for the healing of the whole community and the reduction of crime in general. Fewer victims, fewer crimes, and more peaceful, tranquil communities, as God has promised. And that's the promise of what we can do by working together as Christians.
One of the things we haven't really touched on is that so often the victims of crimes are really victims. I mean, they don't have an opportunity to experience some sort of closure or restoration. Maybe just say a word about that.
Yeah, the victims of the crimes, their spiritual growth, it should be our concern and our priority as well. And for somebody who is not able to forgive, that's not something that we can put on somebody, you know, as Christians. But we should pray for those victims and we should help them as they find their willingness to work through the spiritual side of releasing the damage that's been done to them. That's what sets them free. Just like a prisoner can be redeemed in repaying their debt to the victim and seeking forgiveness from God and those they've hurt, the person that forgives is released from their own prison of fear and anger. And we have a role as a community to care about the value of their life and their relationship with God as well. And these two are inextricably connected. And so as Christians, we need to value the victims that are in our community today and that are created, but also know that our work with the people that have caused the problems and the victims in the past, that if we pour ourselves into them, that we're preventing new victims, which is the most respectful thing we can do. We can't change what's already been done, but we can make an important difference and making sure there's fewer victims going forward.
Craig, you've been serving in this area for several years. Is there one aspect, one thing that you're sort of most excited about or maybe most, and on the other side, perhaps most challenged about in terms of what's on your desk today? What encourages you the most and what challenges you the most?
Well, the most exciting thing is this awakening that's going on. 65 million Americans have a criminal record, Neil. That's one in three. There's 220 million American adults. 65 million American adults have a criminal record. The idea that we'd be coming together and a huge proportion of them are Christians, coming together to raise our voices as we discussed, is just, I think, an amazing opportunity for Christians to be welcome to the national debate about our values and attract people as they see our faith and the transformation of people's lives. And the biggest challenge would be this scourge of addiction that is seemingly overtaking America at such a rapid clip. I think for 40 years we assumed it was illegal drugs, and what we're seeing is the underbelly of addiction. As the Bible describes it, that has been there all the way through. But at this time, with prescription drugs and legal drugs, is overtaking our senior citizens, our college age kids at just a ravaging levels, and we've got to join together and hit that head on.
I always appreciate opportunities to connect with Craig DeRoche. So appreciate what he's doing, and I want to encourage you to get plugged in to the great work of Prison Fellowship. You can go to pfm.org or just search Prison Fellowship and become a part of advocating on behalf of those that are prisoners or former prisoners and their families. Craig DeRoche serves as Senior Vice President of Advocacy and Public Policy for Prison Fellowship. We've got details about the events coming up here as well where you can be part of the Awakening Movement. Craig joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the program or want to pass it on to a friend, you can do that. We post our interviews online. Go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com.